Okay, the recording is now on. Recording people, you missed the introduction and the best joke I ever made per Stephen Hayler's critique. Thank you. We can't, it's so good we can't remember what it was. Okay.
It was the, like to see standard level.
You like that? All right. Awesome. So group hug. We're moving
What?
on.
Just me?
Genesis. Okay. So people of the recording, primarily my mom and one other guy.
Yeah, that's me.
It's you. You listen to the podcast? We'll include you in there just because
Hey,
you're
I'll subscribe for you.
Okay.
Subscribe.
Genesis 23 is about God's faithfulness in forwarding the land promise to Abraham. Genesis 24 about forwarding the seed promise. God's. You sent me a message, Sean?
Hey, that was like an hour ago.
Oh. Okay. This is gonna turn into like a 3 week series. Okay. Genesis 23, land. Genesis 24, seed. Genesis 25, God is faithful in carrying out Abrahamic covenant, land seed blessing. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 23. All right. So this is the focus on the land. I put in words that are important here in the land. Bury. Bury. How do you say that?
Mean burial.
Bury you. Bury. You gotta hurry. Right? It's not bury, like you don't hurry along. Bury and you hurry. Right? People scurry. They don't scurry, they scurry. Bury, not bury. Two different things, okay? Property. That's another thing. This is all having to do with the land. Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. Which her name means princess. This is the princess here, right? And Sarah died at Kiriath Arba. That is Hebron in the land of Canaan. Remember, Canaan was the land that God had promised Abraham, but he doesn't own anything there. And Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her, and Abraham rose up from before his dead, and he said, well, okay, let's stop before we get into just those two verses, all right? So we're focused on the land right now. This event happened shortly after the almost sacrifice of Isaac, and the Lord saw the need of his people, and he provided a substitute for their rescue. Now, you remember Abraham's promised land. Does it have land? You can't just go bury your dead wife wherever you want to. You can't just go onto somebody else's property and do something like that, right? He needs to own land. To be able to do that. Remember, he owns water rights. That was the whole deal with Beersheba. You remember that? That was back in the day. But now he needs to own land, not just have water rights, he needs to own the land. Okay, verse 3. Abraham rose up. That's not like, okay, this is kind of like, he continued on. It's not like everybody in the Bible just lays down and all of a sudden it's like, oh, he rose up. All right, so that road, don't just think that. Don't just think, oh, all these famous people in the Bible, they're just laying on the ground until God tells them to do something. All right? All right? So this is like he just continued on, is the idea. So he continued on from before his dead, and he said to the Hittites, there are Hittites or Canaanites, they're in this land. You got to watch out for them, Hittites, right? They're not around anymore, but if they were, you would want to watch out for them. I am a sojourner and foreigner among you. Give me property among you for a burying place that I may bury my dead out of my sight. The Hittites answered Abraham, "Hear us, my lord. You are a prince of God among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will withhold from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead." Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites. People of the land and said to them, "If you are willing that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns, It is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence as property for a burying place. Now Ephron was sitting among the Hittites, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites, of all who went in at the gate of the city. No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it, and the sight of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. Then Abraham bowed down before the people of the land and said to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, but if you will hear me, I give the price of the field. Accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there. Ephron answered Abraham, my lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between you and me? Bury your dead. Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver that he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weights current among the merchants. All right? So what does Abraham want? Yeah, he wants the land. Do they want to give him the land? And we're going to talk about that. They're being shady here. They're like, yeah, we don't really want you to have the land. So the only way that you could own land back in this culture is if you already owned land. Like you had to be in the landowner's club, which Abraham wasn't. Right? He was a sojourner, a foreigner, a stranger. So this is a problem for Abraham. He doesn't own land, so he can't buy land. So what the Hittites are trying to do here is trying to keep him out of the landowner's club. It's like, we don't want you to be a landowner so that you can't buy land. We want to keep you out of this sort of thing. So, but Abraham wants to be a landowner. He wants to be in that club. Why? Right? God said that he was going to own that place. He's like, no, I want to own this because God promised it to me. I'm here to purchase it. They're like, no, we'll just give it to you. Just bury your dead. No big deal. He's like, no, I'm going to pay for it. I want the title deed on this place because my son needs to inherit it, right? It needs to go from Abraham to Isaac, who's alive, right? He's on the planet. The promised seed guy that's in the seed lineage, at least, he's there. He's also going to need this, right? He's going to need to inherit that, and it needs to come from Abraham. Now, 400 shekels of silver. I don't even think with this is like $20 million, okay? What can you buy with $20 million? Can you just get one grave or can you get like a huge territory today?
You can buy yourself like a big, big mansion.
Yeah, you could buy quite a bit with $20 million, right? And you could buy a whole territory. So they're saying, well, for the price of that cave right there, we're going to charge you the amount for an entire territory. They're trying to rip them off. They're basically saying, hey, I mean, well, you know, that cave over there is like $20 million. So, you know, we'll just let you use it for free. They're thinking that's going to get Abraham to back down because they're going to be like, man, that's a shady deal. And he's going to try to haggle with them or something. Instead, remember, God promised to bless Abraham, to make him wealthy. And so Abraham actually has the cash. So to their surprise, he has it weighed out. He's like, you know, you want the 20 million? Bam. He just gives it to them. They're going, uh-oh. The plan just backfired. Like, we were doing that to try to get him to back down, but he actually just gave us the money. And it's because Abraham believed God. So he had the silver weighed out. He gave it to him. He was able to pay it because God made him wealthy. So to give you an idea, on average, people during this day, they made 10 shekels a year in their wages. So this is like 40 years of work of money that he's just going, bam, just to buy a cave. So Abraham was obviously super wealthy by God's blessing. He's going to buy this for his wife. She's going to be buried there to show this is his land. Yeah, Abraham's getting the title deed for this place, which is very different than, you know, God promised him to the land, and then he like takes off to Egypt all of a sudden, like he did in the past. He's like, no, this is the land that God's going to give him. So you see here, Abraham is securing the land. But it's a, you know, we've talked about Hebrews 11 several times. By faith, Abraham went to live in the land, but he only did it to greet it from afar. He didn't get all of it then, but now he's going to get a title deed. And the title deed is actually written right in your Bible, starting in verse 17. So I'm going to read the title deed to Abraham's land right here for you. So the field of Ephron in Machpelah, which was to the east of Mamre, the field with the cave that was in it, and all the trees that were in the field throughout its whole area, was made over or deeded over to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the Hittites before all who went in at the gate of his city. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, east of Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. The field and the cave that is in it were made over, was deeded over to Abraham as property for a burying place by the Hittites. So he gets it. He secures the land, gets the title deed. God is being faithful to his land promise. Abraham really believes it. I'm buying the place. I'm leaving a legacy. This is going to be going to Isaac. I own it. He's going to get the deed. And Sarah, the mother of kings, was buried in the land while the whole world waits for the king to be born and bring God's people into God's land and God's blessing and rest forever and ever. One of the things that you recognize in this is that, you know, Israel's faith, as they would learn about their faith from Abraham and his example, as Moses would have given them this text in the wilderness, was that this faith wasn't in just being some disembodied spirit that floats around, but God's promise was rooted in dirt and soil and land, real land on a real planet. Chapter 24. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and Yahweh had blessed Abraham in all things. Obviously, right? I mean, if you have cash like that, God has blessed, which, you know, blessing isn't always just cash, by the way. But he was also rich in faith. And Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, "Put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by Yahweh, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell." So, you know, the thigh thing, it's kind of like a handshake. We don't do that. That would be kind of awkward for us, but that was how they did things. And it was not awkward for them. Now, why do you think Abraham doesn't want his son to have a wife from the Canaanites? Because they're supposed to be out of the land, right? Canaanites are bad news. It's like not intermarrying with people, you know, outside of those who are supposed to inherit the promise. But verse 4, "But will go to my country, to my kindred, and take a wife for my son Isaac." Which, you remember back in 22:22, it talks about Bethuel fathered Rebekah. It's like looking forward to, okay, right after the almost sacrifice of Isaac, which now he's going to need a wife. You kind of get this background information. Bethuel fathered Rebekah. Who's this Bethuel guy? Who's this Rebekah gal? To be continued. And you keep waiting. We're going to get there. Verse 5, 24:5. The servant said to him, "Perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I then take your son back to the land from which you came?" Abraham said to him, "See to it that you do not take my son back there. Yahweh, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, 'To your offspring I will give this land.'" And you think about that. He's like, I got to have a title deed. I'm giving it to my offspring. But the offspring needs to have offspring, so he's going to need a wife, right? "To your offspring I will give this land. He will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. But if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you shall be free from this oath of mine. Only you must not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. So now we move from a focus on the land to a focus on the promised seed. This is not a story about how a guy gets a girl, okay? So don't read through this and think, oh man, if I want to get a beautiful wife, I need a servant, I'm going to need 10 donkeys, I'm going to need a nose ring and a couple of bracelets, okay? And
no.
That's not what this is about. The focus is not on how you get a girl, but it's on how God demonstrates his faithfulness, right? Because God is the primary character of all the Bible, right? So Abraham is old, right? He needs to find a wife for Isaac. This is important because he's not going to live forever. And Isaac needs a wife for God's promise to continue. This is the longest chapter in Genesis. The chapters break out in the chapter divisions. So you notice Abraham says, never let Isaac leave this land. That was a mistake he made when he went to Egypt, remember? He said, don't let my son make a mistake that I made. You know, I learned from that. He says, never let Isaac marry a Canaanite. He's a, you know, thinking back to his error with Hagar the Egyptian. So basically, just to break it down, he says, don't leave the country, don't marry a Canaanite. All right? And that's going to be important for Israel's story too, right? You know, the message to them is, don't leave the country, don't marry Canaanites, all right? Now, this land was promised to Abraham's offspring, ultimately. And where this goes in the Bible, you remember, it's offspring, not offsprings. It's seed, not seeds. It's singular, not plural. It's one, not many. Well, but the one does connect to the many. But when you read Galatians 3:16, it says, you know, God made this promise to Abraham's offspring, not offsprings, but it focuses on that one offspring who is the Christ. You know, he's the ultimate fulfillment of what God had promised. So that's where it all traces through. And we'll continue. I have no idea how many more times I'm going to say that to you as we keep going through the Bible, because it just keeps coming up and up and up and up and up. And up. But to get it. It's a singular seed. It's not a whole bunch of them, but it's one who will represent the many. He'll be a king representative of his people. God's promises require and motivate faithful obedience to him, right? God makes a promise. It requires that you believe it, but it also motivates your obedience. You're like, man, if God is faithful and he said this, he's going to do this, I can trust him. Even though it looks totally insane to do this, like it doesn't make sense in the world, I'm going to trust God for this. Verse 10, then the servant took 10 of his master's camels. And just remember that, because it's afterwards they're just called camels. It doesn't tell you how many are. Ben, how many camels are there? 10. There's 10 camels. Ben rhymes with 10. 10 camels, right? Got it? Taking all sorts of choice gifts from his master, he arose and went to Mesopotamia, the city of Nahor, and he made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at the time of evening, the time when women go out to draw water. That's a good time to try to find, you know, do some matchmaking, I guess. And he said, O Yahweh, God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show steadfast love to my master Abraham. I wrote that on the board. This is an important thing that's going to come up here. God, show that your love is faithful. Show that it's steadfast, that it endures to Abraham, just as you promised. And you see in his praying, he's appealing to God's faithfulness. He's appealing to God's promises. Verse 13, behold, I am standing by the spring of water. He's like, look at me, God, I'm here. Where the women come out to draw water, and the daughters of men of the city are coming out to draw water. Let the young woman to whom I shall say, please let down your jar that I may drink, and who shall say, drink, and I will water your camels. Let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. By this I shall know that you have shown steadfast love to my master. So don't overlook this guy. This is a faithful servant of God. Yeah, he's not questioning what Abraham told him to do. He's not questioning God's faithfulness or promise. Let me take a drink. He says that he'll go, and what does he do? He goes, and he has 10 camels, which one shows that, again, Abraham had wealth. But it also shows that God doesn't just use people for stuff. He actually loves people. He cares about this guy. He provides for this guy. He's going to answer this guy's, the servant's, prayers. This guy is a faithful servant. He's a faithful, humble servant. You know, he trusted God's plan. You remember this whole story with Abraham from 12 to 25. It's about faith. You're seeing the people of faith live out their faith. And this servant, he asked for a sign that the woman would give him water and the camels. Now, how much water do you think it takes to quench the thirst of 10 camels? Well, on average, camel drinks about 25 to 35 gallons. So we'll pick the middle number, go with 30. So if you call it 30 gallons, this is going to be, so what's 30 times 10, McKenna?
300.
Thank you, McKenna. All right, 300 gallons. That's a lot of work. I think a gallon's about 9 pounds. She would have most likely had a 3-gallon container. So this is, you know, roughly 27 pounds of water. This would take about 100 trips going down into a well. You got these steps, guy. Go down the steps, come back up with the water. It's like, here you go, camel. Here you go, camel. All right. So I don't know if you've ever ran up and down a set of steps 100 times, but that's not easy. This would be quite the feat. I mean, if somebody did this, you'd be like, whoa, right? Well, we're gonna read this. All right, verse 15, watch what happens now. What's gonna happen with this man and his camels? Before he had finished speaking, behold, Rebecca, who was born to Bethuel, He reappears, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother. So she's related to the Abrahamic family. Abraham's brother came out with her water jar on her shoulder. The suspense is building. The young woman was very attractive in appearance, like Sarah was, right? And a maiden whom no man had known, she went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. Then the servant ran to meet her. He said, "Please give me a little water to drink from your jar." She said, "Drink, my lord." And she quickly let down her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. When she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw water for your camels also, dun, 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 until they have finished drinking." Until they have finished drinking. This is quite the commitment here. You know, you ever told somebody you were going to do something and you got into it and you thought, man, I didn't realize what I was getting myself into. I mean, I just told Amy I was going to help her move from, you know, her one place to the other place, but I didn't know she had all this stuff. Well, this is more stuff to move than Amy's stuff from her one place to her other dwelling, the cottage. So, she says she's going to draw water for the camels also until they finish drinking. Verse 20, so she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran again to the well to draw water, and she drew for all his camels. And it never says she stopped running or she got tired and she slowed down. She's just like running, quickly, you know, this whole time. And then think about how this guy responds now, the servant. He says, the man gazed at her in silence. He's just standing there totally quiet. To learn whether Yahweh had prospered his journey or not. Now, I don't know how long it takes to draw that much water, but, you know, you would think within that 2 hours or however long it would take, he would say something like, wow, I really appreciate what you're doing here. I mean, this is amazing. But, I mean, perhaps he didn't have time to get a word because she's just running. She's like, ever watch, you know, you like watch a video or something in like double speed? I imagine it happening like that. Whoa, 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 whoa. Everybody's talking real fast, like, in this case, there's just silence. He just, whoa. She's still running. Yeah, so I was like, I wonder if this is God fulfilling the sign that I asked for. Yeah, I think it became pretty obvious. So what do you do with a gal that's been, you know, running around and doing all this stuff for a long time? Well, you give her a nose ring, you give her a couple of bracelets and a husband. That's what you do with her. All right. Verse 22, when the camel had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing half a shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels and said, "Please tell me whose daughter you are. Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night?" She said to him, "I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor," which is kind of like what you say when people are like, you know, "Who's your dad?" She added, "We have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night." The man bowed his head and worshiped Yahweh. That's the right response. It's like, God was faithful. Look at this. This is amazing. And praise the Lord for this. And he said, "Blessed be Yahweh, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and faithfulness toward my master. As for me, Yahweh has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsmen." Then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. You see that? He's praising God for his steadfast love, for his faithfulness. Like, look, God kept his promises. And when he said, well, who led him, you know, in all of this? Like, Yahweh led him in all of this. And he just sought to be obedient. And he saw what God was doing, you know, after the fact, right? He didn't know how God was going to do all this. He just decided, I'm going to obey him. He figured out the how after it all happened. Verse 29, Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. Boo to Laban. We'll be talking about him next week, Lord willing. Laban ran out toward the man to the spring as soon as he saw the ring. Oh, this is a different. Okay, never mind. Let's just keep going. Okay. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms. Oh, yeah. Laban, his sister. And he heard the words of Rebekah's sister. "Thus the man spoke to me. He went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. He said, 'Come in, O blessed of Yahweh. Why do you stand outside? For I prepared the house and a place for the camels.' So the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels and gave straw and fodder to the camels. There was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were hiding with him. Then food was set before him to eat. But he said, 'I will not eat until I have said what I have to say.' He said, 'Speak on.' So he said, 'I am Abraham's servant. Yahweh has greatly blessed my master, and he has become great,'" just like God promised, right? "'He has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male servants and female servants, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old. To him he has given all that he has. An inheritance will be passed to his son. My master made me swear, saying, "You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell, but you shall go to my father's house and to my clan and take a wife for my son.' I said to my master, 'Perhaps the woman will not follow me.' But he said to me, 'Yahweh, before whom I have walked, will send his angel with you and prosper your way. You shall take a wife for my son, for my clan, for my father's house, that you will be set free from my oath when you come to my clan, and if they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath.'" So, okay, he recounts the whole story. This is what I was told to do. It happened. It's your sister. She's the gal, all right? So he sent, okay, God is steadfast and faithfulness, verse 49. "Now then, if you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. And if not, tell me that I may run, that I may turn to the right or to the left." Right? So Laban and Bethuel together, Bethuel being her dad, Laban, the brother, they say, all right, this is what's happening. This is pretty clear what's going on. Abraham's servants, they hear the words. Verse 52, he bowed himself to the earth before Yahweh. She gets some gifts. God prospers his way. And verse 60, here's a big important verse. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "Our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s. Remember what God had promised Abraham, children would be more numerous than the stars in the sky and in the sand and the sea, thousands of 10,000s. And may your offspring possess the gate of those who hate him, right? The land of the Canaanites. So Rebekah says that she's going to do what the servant had asked. The servant is totally amazed. I mean, he's, wow, God very obviously fulfilled this sign. Rebekah is a close relative to Abraham. And the servant tells, you know, these other fellows about God's faithfulness. And you see Abraham's faith is starting to have an international impact. You know, you're seeing the nation being built here and a blessing to others. I mean, even if you're just, you know, an evil Hittite, and you know Abraham comes and drops 400 shekels in your hand for a little cave, right? But Dad, Bethuel, wants to keep Rebekah a little bit longer, but she says, "I have to go." So now you're seeing not only the servant's faith, but also Rebekah's faith. She's like, "I believe this. I believe this stuff. I'm gonna trust Yahweh and follow him." She believes in God's plan, and therefore the plan is advancing. So verse 60, remember it says, "May your offspring possess the gate of those who hate him." This is what was said in Genesis chapter 22:17 to Abraham. And this links Rebekah to God moving forward the Genesis 3:15 plan. Remember, there's going to be an offspring who crushes the head of the serpent, crushes the head of the enemies of God. So the Genesis 3:15 is plan moving forward. It's not happening because of human effort, because of human performance, but because of God's promise, because God is faithful. And they're going to have babies, which is going to be the continuation of Genesis 1:28, for them to be fruitful and multiply for the sake of the singular promised seed to be born someday, long in the future from this point. God's promises, as you look in this text, they're just carried out in everyday life, in everyday people, in this everyday faithfulness. You know, they're not sitting there questioning God. They're trusting his plan. They're just following it, and God is doing all of this stuff. He's orchestrating this stuff, and he does that in our lives too. We're reading about our God. You know, our God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We're going to read about him later. But through our seeking to just be faithful to him day to day, God is orchestrating all of this marvelous stuff for the sake of his kingdom. Every now and then we get, you know, after we're obedient, we get to look back and like, well, God did that. But a lot of it we won't see until to heaven. So let's look at 62:24-62. Now Isaac had returned from Beer Lahavroi and was dwelling in the Negev, and Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening, and he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels coming, and Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel, said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" She's already interested in the guy, right? "Who is that?" The servant said, "It is my master." Which, remember, who did he say was his master first time he met her? Abraham. Now, who is he saying is his master? Right? So, you see, there's a transfer. It's like, who's getting the title deed? Isaac. How do we know? He's got the woman, right? So the servant said, "It is my master." So she took her veil and covered herself. Now, why did she do that? It's like, because I'm getting married. I'm getting married to this guy. I'm getting on my wedding clothes, right? You know, she's demonstrating her faith in that. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his his mother's death. Right? So the legacy has successfully passed now from Abraham to Isaac. And the servant recognizes it. That's why he's saying master to Isaac. And you see Rebecca has faith in God's plan moving forward. And what's interesting is like all of the millions of people that might have existed on the planet, like everything in human history at this point hinged on this marriage happening. It's like this had to happen. Like if it didn't happen, everything falls apart. Everything that had been happening in all of history just falls apart. You know, the land can't continue on. The seed promise can't continue on. God's blessing can't come to the nation to go out to all the nations. Everything would fall apart. But God, this little two people that didn't own land until Abraham got some land. God is, it seems so insignificant, right? And you think, you know, other people are thinking about all sorts of other stuff on the planet, doing all sorts of other things, busy with this, that, and the other. And God, in this quiet, small sort of way, just keeps advancing his plan faithfully. Which we see that as we come to chapter 25. Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. Which sounds kind of gruff, but maybe she was nice. I don't know. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Right? So the nation's expanding. It's building. Jokshan fathered Sheba and Dedan. The sons of Dedan were Asherim, Letashim, and Lumim. And the sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanak, Abida, and Eldaah. All these were the children of Keturah. Abraham gave all he had to Isaac. And you see, it's happening. God's building his nation. They're being fruitful and multiplying. It's transferring to Isaac. It says, but the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts, and while he was still living, he sent them away from his son Isaac eastward to the east country. These are the days of Abraham's life. 175 years. Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age. Remember, that's exactly what God had promised to him in the past. He said, you're going to die in a good old age. So seeing this is like, not only was God faithful to the seed promise, but he was faithful to bless Abraham in dying in a good old age, just like he said. He said, this is the conclusion, in a way, of God's faithfulness to Abraham, which is passing on to Isaac, which is going to go beyond that. He was an old man, full of years, and was gathered to his people. Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, east of Mamre, the field that Abraham purchased from the Hittites. There Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. So there we have the father of a multitude who was buried with the princess of kings. After the death of Abraham, God blessed Isaac, his son, and Isaac settled in Beer Lahai-Roi. Beer Lahai-Roi. Right? So in all the funny stuff that happened around Isaac, his name means he laughs, and people enjoy God's faithfulness to his promises of land, of seed, of blessing, and Abraham's legacy continues. But while all his family receives blessing, but you remember Abraham's family is bigger than just Isaac. Remember, he was a child of the promise. There's this other guy. His name starts with an I. Ishmael, right? Now, the land, seed, and blessing moves to Isaac, not to Ishmael, right? The legacy is going to carry on through the promised child. Now that Isaac has a wife, how do you think Abraham feels about it? Like, I can die now. Yeah, it's gonna be all right. God is faithful. And who can measure the significance of Abraham in the Bible? I mean, you can think of how often he's brought up throughout Scripture. I mean, he's in a way like the man of faith. It's like, you know, we understand what faith is through Abraham, and, you know, continually throughout Scripture, be it Romans, Galatians, James, Hebrews, those books look back to explain faith by looking at the life of Abraham as the foundation of that. So here we see God is beginning the Hebrew nation, right? Which is going to be the instrument of the reversal of the Tower of Babel curse. Remember, God confused the nations. He had scattered them. They had been cursed. But God said, through one nation, they're all going to be blessed. They're going to be brought back together and blessing people from every tribe, tongue, and nation, unconfused, united in the truth. In the beginning of possessing land, Abraham is also beginning to become a blessing to all nations. He's going to be the instrument, he's going to be the tool that God uses to reverse all the stuff that happened in Genesis 1 through 11. The covenant with Abraham and his sons, it is God's plan to reconcile three relationships that people exist in. He's going to reconcile the relationship of God and man. He's going to reconcile the relationship of man to man. He's going to reconcile the relationship of man to land. So we continue to anticipate those things happening. It's going to be the longing of the hearts of God's people. There's going to be movement towards seeing God be faithful in doing that until it gets fulfilled in the still future to us, even. At least as far as the land promise, God's people being in God's land and God's blessing us forever and ever. Have you noticed I say that a bunch? All right. What did I just say? God's people in under, and you could add and rest forever and ever. Because I preached a sermon on that last week, and I said it a whole bunch. Abraham's legacy of faith is immense. But I want you to also think about how he grew in his faith. You don't see him struggling with sin anymore as much. I mean, we don't have that. You just see him, he resists sin. He's not saying, oh God, that's how you want to do things? I have a plan for you. Right? He just said, yeah, God, you know what you're doing. I can trust you. And you see, he's developed a greater resistance towards sin, a greater trust in God's plan. And this was years in the making. And God's love was steadfast and faithful to him through the whole thing. And that's how all of us who grow in faith, it's something that happens over time. It's not something that just happens in a week. It's not like, okay, I resisted that sin for one day, and now it's not a temptation anymore. I'm okay. It's growth. It's something that takes time. It doesn't always just happen overnight, but it's growing in faith by remembering God's promises, by seeing his faithfulness, by recounting his steadfast love, that we have a greater resistance to sin, a greater trust in God's plan. God's whole plan is to reconcile all things in himself. And we see all the elements of this plan being built out just from Abraham, from his life, from the covenant that was made with him concerning and blessing, which I didn't write on the board, right? Which is all tied into that. Now, as mentioned earlier, the scripture of Genesis, the book of Genesis, the way that it breaks out the chapter distinctions is by the phrase, these are the generations of, right? So in chapter 12, in a way, you're actually technically like getting the eighth chapter of Genesis. And this only goes from 12 to 18. It's teeny tiny. In a way, it's trying to de-emphasize something. Whereas when we get to verse 19, it says, these are the generations of Isaac. That's going to go from chapter 25 to 35. you're going to hear more about Isaac than Ishmael, because the focus is on Isaac, not Ishmael. So here, Ishmael gets de-emphasized. Verse 12, these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, you want to remember that, Sarah's servant, bore to Abraham, and he has some sons who have some names, who live in villages, and princes come from them. You know, it's part of God's promise. You know, even princes would come through Ishmael. And Ishmael, he lived 137 years, he breathed his last, and died and was gathered to his people. They settled from Havilah to Shur, which is opposite Egypt, in the direction of Assyria. He settled over against all his kinsmen. So this guy is going to, it's kind of building up. There's still going to be some tension in the family. There's going to be some opposition between Egyptians and Israelites, right? And is that, but what God wants you to focus on is his faithfulness, which is based on this promise, which is coming through. It's just inherited and carried on Abrahamic legacy through Isaac. The end. We're going to pick up on Isaac next time. All right. 2.5 chapters.
Yeah.
Did it. Yet. Wait till we have to go through our tension.